cliffcentral.com.
All right, it is Thursday. That means we get to check in on the burning platform with Justice Malala. It's brought to you by Nando's. Nando's obviously are always on top of what's going on in current affairs. They like to stimulate debate and conversation. They like getting us talking about all kinds of things that are happening in South Africa. And today's a good day when it comes to what's happening in the country. Why? Because El Presidente, El Duce, is taking to the microphone this evening for what has become the least anticipated event in South African political history.
Come now. We all need something to put us to sleep, sir.
Yeah.
This is a good day if you're looking for a good, solid 8 hours.
You know, Justice, I remember Thabo Mbeki made beautiful speeches about the African Renaissance and about South Africa's place in the world and how he was an African. I remember when the first year of President Zuma's term, we invented the State of the Nation drinking game, which had everybody excited.
You remember that?
It was a sensation.
Yes.
The second year, we did it slightly differently. We said you have to take off clothes every time he does certain things in the speech. People were naked all over the country. By the third year, the shine had worn off because we had dealt with a couple of major social issues. There had been some ugly, nasty blind spots that had suddenly been uncovered. It was shown that the president had various relationships with various nefarious people. And by the fourth, fifth year, I mean, we just started losing hope completely. We thought this is an administration which no longer occupies any kind of moral high ground. We had by that stage dealt with Marikana. We had by that stage dealt with Andries Tatane. We'd had a lot of ugly things happen. And of course, the president hadn't even phoned Shabir to find out how he was. Now I don't want to joke about it anymore. There's nothing funny about this office anymore.
There isn't, actually, and this office knows it. I'm quite interested. I think the game that you invented right at the beginning of this administration, all the things you did, were shows you the hope that people had that, okay, things will get better. Let's laugh through this. And then you laugh again, and then you think it's not funny anymore. And then now you have a quasi-military operation underway in Parliament. You have 441 troops deployed. That's more than double what was deployed last year. In 2015, there were 188. In 2013, there were 168. What's going on here?
Well, and what do you think it is?
Well, I think this is a paranoid president. This is a president who has lost touch with his own people and is becoming more and more afraid of them. He's seen the grip and he's being advised by intelligence operatives who tell him, oh, you're about to be attacked and so forth. There's a beautiful picture that was published by the City Press last year. Hmm. And the picture shows President Zuma walking into, I think it was Orlando Stadium, in the middle of the year. And his security detail had doubled from about 10. In fact, it was about 30 people walking around him. And this tells you something about a president who, over time, has become deathly scared of his political opponents, has become deathly scared of his own people, and is living in a cocoon where he believes that actually someone is going to attack me without asking why would they attack me? Why would they be so anti anything that I'm doing? And I think that is where we are now. This is an administration that has failed the people. President Zuma has. Let's be fair. What is this State of the Nation about? What do people really want out of President Zuma? They want jobs. There are 9 million South Africans who don't have jobs today. When President Zuma came into power, unemployment was at 21% in South Africa. It's at 27.1% today. And so at the end of the day, this government has failed at the most fundamental level, and it is to create jobs. And so if you're not creating jobs, if what's happening to you is that every day there are more and more people out on the street. You will start being afraid of your own people. And this is what's happening now.
But he's done something strange. I don't know whether this was his idea or whether it was someone else's idea, but there's this people's assembly that they're going to have at 3 o'clock in the afternoon where the president and others will address a crowd of obviously bust-in die-hard ANC supporters who, God knows, they'll get a T-shirt and maybe lunch for their trouble.
This is what's happening here is that it's deflection. It's saying, you know what? I know that when I enter the Houses of Parliament, when I walk into the National Assembly, Julius Malema, well, Julius won't be there, a member of the EFF, Mbuyiseni Ndlozi, Floyd Shivambu, Godrej Gali, all of them are going to stand up and say, excuse me, sir, what about this? What about the fact? And this should be asked if I was a member of the opposition. Jacob Zuma last year went to the National Council of Provinces and said that I wasn't given a chance to come and to respond to the State of Capture report. Thuli Madonsela, or her office, released the report, the four-hour audio of him refusing to answer questions and essentially dissembling and, you know, backtracking and trying to find reasons essentially not to say yes or no to direct questions that were pretty simple to answer and which he should have answered. So someone this evening at 7 p.m., as he stands to speak, will say, Speaker Baleka Mbete, please ask him to tell us why he lied to the NCOP. And he did. He did, because he said, I wasn't given a chance to respond to the allegations put against me. Over 4 hours, he refused to respond. So
is that lying to the NCOP? Is that not a criminal thing to do, to lie to the legislature?
Well, it's certainly something that the legislature should hold him to account for. It might not be criminal. I'm not sure about the law. It certainly is grounds for impeachment for lying in the House by the President of the Republic. And so I think someone should ask him that question direct, because already we know this is a man who the Constitutional Court has said failed to uphold the Constitution, failed to honor his oath of office, and he's gone and done it again, and this time to the people of South Africa through the National Council of Provinces. He has dishonored that house, and so today he should be held to account.
All right, let's talk about some of the other things that are going on too, because I know that that's on everyone's mind today. But what do you think he's actually going to say?
Yes, I mean, this is the big, big thing that we...
What has he got to boast about? This is a guy who has shown scant interest in what's actually happening in the country, but an enormous amount of detailed interest in his own future.
There are two things to look out for, I think, in this year's State of the Nation speech. The first thing is to say, this is President Zuma's 10th State of the Nation speech. Remember that when we have elections, we've had two, so they've piled up now. President Zuma has since 2009 followed a script that largely is made by the ANC. So the ANC goes to its conferences, makes policy, and he has to implement those policies. This is a year in which President Zuma has seemed to go off the ANC script. The ANC has always said, for example, on land reform, you might agree, you might not agree with the ANC, but the ANC will say, we are going to go through a process of land reform where SIA has a farm and Justice makes a claim on that farm, and we will pay SIA some money for his property. Now, President Zuma has been moving and been shifting towards a more EFF position lately.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk of radical transformation.
Radical economic transformation. And
it's being touted around by people like Jimmy Manye and the other Gupta supporters, Musa Benzizwane,
exactly.
those sort of people. So exactly. what is this a last desperate attempt to kind of win over some of those
so
people?
So the big question that we all must ask is, when did President Zuma start becoming an economist? When did he become interested in economics and budgeting? Because all along in his tenure, all along before he became president of the ANC, he was not interested at all in radical or non-radical economic transformation. Mm-hmm. This was a man who was just doing his own thing. So what you've seen is that essentially there is a grouping, and you mentioned Jimmy Manye and others. There's a grouping built around the Gupta family who want to say, the reason why Eskom sponsored or gave the Gupta 600 million rand to buy a mine so that they could supply Eskom is this is what radical economic transformation is. That is taking money and putting it in the hands of black people. Now, you want to put money in the hands of black people, you've got to give them jobs. That's my view. Not give a small circle of people money so that they can become filthy rich.
It's not even the small circle of people, though. It's one family of non-South African citizens called the Guptas who are the president's benefactors and are the people who dish out money to a bunch of beholden people in government.
Gareth, I think you're absolutely wrong. It's one family and one man, and that's the president's son. But, I don't want to fight you on the facts here.
All right, no, you win. I'm not even going to argue with you. Cool.
That said, so what you're seeing now is sort of revolutionary language, stolen, taken, and used for personal benefit. So it's a bit like Robert Mugabe standing up and saying, I'm for the people, I'm for land reform, and so forth and so forth. And who ends up with 20 farms? Oh, Grace Mugabe has ended up with 20 farms. What you're seeing is a move.
Our people are tired of this. I don't think anyone believes him anymore.
Well, perhaps that's why he's deployed 441 troops. Think about it. When we sent troops to Burundi, we sent 200 troops. When we sent troops to the DRC, we sent 800. For our own people, we sent 441. So the big question is, perhaps he knows that I'm running out of time, that people are beginning to turn against me, and perhaps people will not, try for revolution, insurrection, any kind of violence in South Africa. Open revolt. I think the open revolt we might have is totally different, and it might be related to not in parliament, certainly. I think that demonstrations around parliament are for show. I think that reports that there were people who were going to set up shacks outside parliament were really just to highlight the issue. They're not there to take out Jacob Zuma. But he's paranoid. He knows that people will not believe this kind of nonsense for long. And that is why he has taken a stance, essentially, that says that I'm going to make sure that I can finish this project of looting and do as much damage as I can do by 2019 when he has to leave. When he has to leave the seat of power. It is worth talking about Jacob Zuma and the power that he wields in South Africa and in the ANC today. Mm-hmm. If you think about what's happened with this security blanket over parliament, Jackson Mthembu has come out and said, this is outrageous. We can't have the military in parliament. The officers presiding over parliament, the people who have protected Jacob Zuma from the EFF over the past 2.5-3 years, have said that we didn't know. If you look at the press conference that was held by Baleka Mbete and Lechesa Tsenudi in parliament yesterday, they said, oh, we don't know where they're going to be deployed. This is something that's done by the executive and so forth and so forth. Jacob Zuma had signed the deployment in the language of the army, they call it employment of that 41 infantry battalion, I think it's called, had signed that letter on the 2nd of February. So the big question is, how are these people feeling that they were not told, they didn't know, and they're seeing Ubaba essentially acting pretty much unilaterally, like a bit of a, you know, I'm the big man of South Africa. So I think Jacob Zuma, the Jacob Zuma you will see at 7 p.m. tonight, is an interesting man. He's a man on fire. Because last year, after he addressed Parliament, the Constitutional Court said, you have failed to uphold, to respect your oath of office.
That was after his State of the Nation.
That was his after his State of the Nation. This is the first time he's appearing after that. This last year was the same year in which Derek Anekom, supported by Aaron Motsoaledi and other members of the NEC of the ANC, stood up in the National Executive Committee of the ANC and said, Baba, we don't think you're the right man for the job anymore. Perhaps it's time for you to step down. And he was defended by people like D.D. Mabuza, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, people from the Northwest, and so forth and so forth. But Jacob Zuma knows that not everyone of those 400 members of parliament is behind him. He is no longer in the ANC, got 75% support of the National Executive Committee of the ANC. The Northern Cape ANC has come out and said they would support Cyril Ramaphosa as the president of the party. Gauteng has never wanted him, has never liked him, has always wanted to see the back of him as soon as it could, as they could. other parts of the ANC, parts of the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal, parts of the ANC led by Senzo Mkhwanazi are saying, Baba, we're not sure that, you know, we want your successor or that you're so great. Half of the Eastern Cape is no longer in his pocket. And so he's not as powerful as all that. This is the last time he will deliver a State of the Nation address as president of the ANC and president of the country. Next year, when he arrives on in February at 7 p.m. on the second Thursday of the year, he will face Parliament not being president of the ANC. That means that he doesn't have political backing anymore. So, in fact, President Zuma may only have the next year to achieve everything that he has failed to achieve for the people of South Africa and to achieve everything that he needs to achieve for himself. Because what happened to Thabo Mbeki in September 2008, 9 months after he was kicked out as ANC president, may happen way quicker in the case of Jacob Zuma. Let us assume that Cyril Ramaphosa wins that contest. Cyril Ramaphosa and Gwede Mantashe, or whoever the Secretary General is, on the 6th of January 2018, they have their first National Executive Committee meeting of the ANC. At that National Executive Committee of the ANC, they say, comrades, this is the line of march. This is what we're doing for the year. How do people feel? Jacob Zuma takes some or other decision in the state, starts talking about white monopoly capital. They say, Baba, we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about the NDP and how we implement it. And he doesn't listen. My view is that in the third week at the NEC Lekgotla of the ANC in 2018, it could well be that someone stands up and says, guys, we need to achieve in the next year, before the election in 2019, something significant. And we don't think that Jacob Zuma is the guy for the job. So in fact, in the third week of January 2018, Jacob Zuma may well lose his seat if his candidate doesn't win in December this year. So Jacob Zuma is a man who's running out of time. And my view is that if he doesn't make sure that his candidate, and that's Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, doesn't win in December, that man is curtains. He won't see another State of the Nation address in his life. This would be his last, not his last as the ANC president, but his last period.
But that's a whole year and a half away.
It's a whole year away. Yeah. In the meantime, I think that he remains in power simply because he still has just over 50% support in the NEC. But that could change as people realize that that train is doesn't have wheels anymore and a new guy is coming into town.
Just as part of the State of the Nation, though, is for him to almost play the game that everything's okay. So he'll talk about things as if he's still very much the hands-on head of state.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to talk about security, unemployment, policy uncertainty, poor economic growth, or is he?
He will. He has to. He's got an hour. And no matter how slowly he takes it, he's still got to fill that hour with something. So he will touch on those. He will say, look, we're working with business, labor, to make things better. He'll say the things that the ratings agencies, international investors want to hear. But I do think that Jacob Zuma will play to the message that he's been playing to. And that message is, you know what? We are now entering a year of radical economic transformation, and we are going to do certain things that are going to change the way South Africa works. Is it a genuine policy play? Is this for real? I'm very, very skeptical about Jacob Zuma and the new economic policy line that he seems to be taking. I think it's orchestrated. I think it's orchestrated to open up the state-owned enterprises, to open up the way for, and I'm putting it out there, for the Gupta family and his family to have access to resources of the state and to essentially control more of these entities. I don't think the radical economic transformation that is spoken about by Jimmy Manyi, all these other people built around the Zuma Gupta businesses, is at all sincere and is at all about ordinary South Africans who are unemployed or the 16 million who are on social grants. It's a total radical economic transformation. No one is talking about radical economic transformation or radical transformation of the education system to make it better. And I think that is where, at the end of the day, we should all be looking. And there's a problem if we're not looking there.
Well, I see Pierre Defosse has written an article in which he says, using the military to intimidate opponents constitutes an attack on democracy. So some very heavy language.
I think the next few weeks, as the speech is debated in Parliament, will be interesting. I think a motion may be tabled, certainly by the EFF, certainly by the DA, that says that what happened with this deployment, this extraordinary deployment, needs to be consequences. Because, you know, I've thought about it a lot, and why is it you've seen our officials going up and down on this? I interviewed Thandi Modise on Monday, and one of the things she said is, no, we don't know what happens outside Parliament, but inside it's all free and so forth. You know, when you have snipers on the roofs of Parliament,
sure.
When you have razor wire, when you have soldiers, sure. Soldiers, not think about it. I don't know why South Africa needs to be more outraged. There are 6,000 police officers, 6,000 police officers who will be working on or around the State of the Nation speech. 6,000.
The total number of police in the Western Cape is?
Ooh, I think, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
It's about 11,000.
Yeah. 6,000 will be on duty for this.
So that means throughout the rest of the Western Cape, no one is looking after anybody. No one is protecting
the
ordinary
people. And the people of Mitchell's Plain and Hanover Park have been asking. We have drug dealers running rampant in our communities. Do something, even if it means you deploy the army. And we never do.
No, but we'll deploy the army for the protection of this man's ego.
One man under pressure, not under attack, under pressure, on a political level, and yet we deploy not just 6,000 police, but 441 troops. Gareth, you asked a very important question. Why is the ANC having its own People's Assembly when the People's Assembly is happening at 7 p.m.? And I think it's because Jacob Zuma and the ANC have lost the narrative. Who has been setting the agenda over the past 3 years in Parliament?
The EFF and the DA.
They ask questions, they walk out, they hold him accountable. Instead of the ANC looking the problem in the eye, they're saying we'll have our own other assembly outside so that we can have attention on ourselves.
And symbolically before the State of the Nation, almost as if it must pip that, it must preempt that, it exactly. must be more important in their eyes. What will he say at that gathering?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what he'll say at that gathering and what exactly it says about the state of this country. Are we being run from Luthuli House or from Gandla, or are we being run from the Union Buildings and Parliament in Cape Town? Because if this is the alternative, and the ANC is setting up an alternative structure, what is it saying about the institutions of state? It is essentially saying we, those who are in power, don't believe in parliament. We don't believe in government, and so we will have another forum where we will speak to ourselves and our people. And this for me is. It's desperate, and in the Western Cape, I think it just shows why the ANC in the Western Cape has been so sadly lacking. And that's why the DA has gone to a near two-thirds majority now. And I think the ANC will continue to flip-flop and wither away in that province. And you'll see this happening in Gauteng as well. In 2019.
Justice, you wrote an article at the beginning of this week about the people who were killed, the mental health patients who were basically murdered. I mean, you know, they starved to death, they dehydrated. Mm. These people were completely left to their own devices, people who have no means of looking after themselves. We spoke about it last week and it really affected me quite badly. I thought about them a lot over the course of the last 7 days. And I've told everybody to go and read this article. But it seems to me like, you know, someone who's you're a sober analyst of the things that are going on around us, and you usually don't get very personally, emotionally upset by stuff. I mean, you laugh about the political goings on. Mm. We have a sense of humor on this show. It seemed to me like in that article that you didn't have a sense of humor either, that this was not something that you could find any silver lining in.
No, I really think that, you know, 94 people died, and I think you and I last week, and we agree on this. 94 people died, and I sometimes sit there and say, anywhere else in the world, 94 people die, there would be major outrage. But it seems to me that lives don't matter, and these lives didn't matter much to authority in South Africa. The fact that our cabinet has issued numerous statements about Thulima Donsela, about Jos van der Westhuizen, about the State of the Nation speech, da, da, da. But when it comes to these 94 psychiatric patients who have died, it was, oh, you know what? We'll just issue one and that's it.
Worse, they said, we applaud Redani Mahlangu for resigning.
I mean, they should be saying, how could this have gone on and on and on your watch? They should be saying, Where are the criminal prosecutions in this? And quite frankly, I think what we've seen and heard is just the tip of the iceberg. These reports from Mamelodi and Soshanguve and Tshwane that 22 bodies are in morgues, what does it say about the rest of those people? You know, if you have mental health issues, you are someone who is afraid of the world. You worry, you have strains and stresses and all sorts of people.
It's a horrible existence a lot of the time.
A lot of the time it's terrible. But it doesn't mean that you're not human. And I think what has happened with this administration and what happened with Tetani Mahlangu and her officials was, these are not fully human. These are not people. So we now have our politicians making these extraordinary decisions that this is worth a life worth saving. That one is not worth saving.
Well, you know how people are throwing around, this one is like Hitler, that one's like it. That Hitler actually did. He said mentally ill people, physically disabled people, gypsies, Jews, gay people.
Exactly.
These are not people.
So you know, I just think... you know, there's a line we all like quoting, people like Steve Biko, Franz Fanon, and so forth and so forth. It is worth thinking about something that Steve Biko said. And he said, what do we want for this new South Africa that at the time in the 70s, the Black Consciousness Movement and others were fighting for? And he said, it is to give South Africa a more human face. If this is the face that we present to ourselves and to the world, the face of no Sia or Ben or Justice or so-and-so are not worthy of being regarded as human, then I don't know what we are. We are...
monsters.
We are worse than anything that we ever thought we'd become. And where's the human face? The human face would have been us saying... I'm not going to save 240 rand. I'm going to make sure that these people live and continue to live in a way that gives their families comfort that, you know what, my son, my daughter, my husband, my wife is not living with indignity. But what we've done is totally the opposite.
Let this also be a lesson to anyone who believes that the state has your best interests at heart. It is clear from this that this state is not a nanny state. This state does not care about you. If they're giving you welfare money, it's probably because they want to keep you in thrall.
That, I think, you know, sadly, because that's not the way it should be, but sadly, that's the way it is. And this, what happened with this particular case of the 94 underlines the cynicism, a cynicism that I had hoped we'd never get to, actually. I mean, you know, one of the things about the administration, the ANC, the government that we have, is that I think right at the beginning, we all perhaps were naive to think that the ANC had such a deep level of humanity built into its ideas that even with the pressures of power, of government, that those ideals would survive those pressures, that a kleptocratic leader like a Jacob Zuma would not overwhelm the ANC and turn it into the monster that he's turned it into. But I think 23 years in power has showed that it's possible. And this case of the Lifecidimeni patients shows that it's not just possible for one individual. What you had, because we spoke about this last week, is that at the end of the day, you have an administration in Gauteng where we say, you know, Premier Makhura is fantastic. So many of his people are fantastic. But even this ANC in Gauteng allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
You know, David Makura is a nice guy and all that, but I think he needs to account about why exactly the past 6 months, the past 12 months, he didn't do anything about this. And he can say I instituted an inquiry and so forth. But the whole thing is shocking. It's really shocking.
You know, we had two guests yesterday. We had Herman Mashaba, who's a controversial man because, you know, a lot of people say that he's like the black Donald Trump and he's come out of business into politics. And
yeah.
He has some ideas which people do like and others that people don't like. And, you know, there are obviously political forces in,
in flux. There's contestation there.
Correct. So he comes in and he told me, because I said to him, you know, Park Stau and the city of Joburg, they didn't leave the place in such a horrible mess.
Mm.
Because we're so desperate, I was so desperate, I think, to look for the good ANC in all of this. He said to me, no, I think that's very disturbing. He said, please come and have a look at the budget and come and look at how much money has been pilfered away and how much corruption there is and how this Jobs for Josie or whatever it was that was actually a scheme to help card-carrying members of that party get rich. It had nothing to do with trying to help the city at all. He's shut it down. Now, that's obviously his point of view.
Yeah.
But I look at these things and I think, you know, even when you're looking for the good, sometimes they make it so goddamned hard for you.
Yeah.
And then we had Harry Nell in afterwards, who obviously was the famous prosecutor in the Oscar Pistorius trial. He also famously took on Jackie Salibi and won. And that's a hard thing to do in criminal law because you have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, not just on a balance of probability. So he's a smart man. He said to me when I brought up this issue of these psychiatric patients, he said the whole reason that he's gone into private work now with AfriForum is so that if the NPA don't pick up this case and they decide not to prosecute anyone, they can actually apply to prosecute those people privately.
Yeah.
But as part of the criminal justice system. And who knows that it isn't going to be NGOs that save us from this quagmire. They already have many times.
Let me tell you, the NGOs all over the world have done such incredible work. And in Russia, there are so many NGOs that have been banned simply because they did exactly this kind of work. So think about how long it has taken Sean Abrams to think about, he's still thinking about the 783 charges of corruption, racketeering, fraud that face Jacob Zuma. Now, what is holding up that case? Because we know that one man was found guilty and sent to jail for giving the money.
Shabir.
So why is it taking so long to prosecute the receiver of the money? It's extraordinary.
And we're not saying one is better or worse than the other. We're saying they're equally corrupt.
Exactly. So if we've got the briber, surely the bribee should be prosecuted at the very least.
And this is why people say, oh, the law is an ass and the law is not fair and some people get special treatment and others do not.
Yeah. But, you know, sadly, that idea, to go back to the point you're making, that idea of a good ANC, an ANC with these values and these history that goes back to Pixley Kaisakasim and others, the some of the practices you see make you stop and say, perhaps I was naive. It's interesting for me, Herman Mashaba and his program, that the program that is brought to a close. In June last year, when the ANC in Tshwane, when all those protests happened, who was taking part in those protests? ANC leaders would go to young people working on similar programs and say, the ANC is bringing in What was her name? She was the
Togo Didiza.
Togo Didiza. And they'd say that ANC is bringing in Togo Didiza, and she's going to do what Mashaba is doing, stop these public works programs, work schemes where people go and pick up rubbish and so forth and so forth and so forth. And so they, ANC leaders, organized against their own organization, told these people that you're going to lose your job. The stipend that you get from that. And so go out and burn so that you send them a message that they mustn't touch Sputla Ramokopa as the mayor of Tshwane. And that is why the protests that you saw in Tshwane last year had nothing to do with services or anything. It was ANC leaders using poor people who work on these programs to fight their own internal battles. And that is the extent to which the rot has sunk in.
This is no different to the way that the old regime used to use that tricameral parliament for its own ends.
Exactly.
Where they patronized black, Indian and colored people more especially, and made them feel like they were part of something, just so that they could count them in on their own devilish scheme.
Right? Devilish, I think, is a good word to use.
It's a devilish scheme. And I'm sorry, I think what this points to, and it all comes to a nice ugly head tonight, is a rot, is that our ANC, the ANC that we that brought us freedom in this country, that fought so hard, that had so many great men and women who laid down their lives to make things happen, that ANC, we've got to admit now, is dead.
Well, I think democracy, though, is a work in progress. And I think what we're seeing is another step, hopefully a step for the better, a step where towards a presidency that is held accountable, parties that are held accountable, politicians that are held accountable. And I hope our MPs today, whether it's Bantu Holomisa or Terale Kota, are not intimidated tonight, are not made to feel that they cannot stand up. And I hope Terale Kota, people like him who have all their lives stood up against tyranny, whether it's a young Terale Kota going to Robben Island in the 70s and so forth, I think they will stand up and say, not in our name will you have the state of the nation, an assembly of the people, turned into a military zone where people are scared to even say, the emperor has no clothes. This is intimidation. And I hope that happens tonight. So, happy times.
Justice. Yeah, we'll speak to you next Thursday and see whether there was anything valuable said.
Yes, we will go through the speech line by line.
You remember those days where we used to analyze the color of the tie and we looked for clues in Thabo Mbeki's speech because he was so ephemeral and so difficult to nail down and he gave so little away. Well, now we're dealing with blunt objects.
I know.
There's no more finesse.
No.
God, how I miss Thabo Mbeki. I hope wherever he's sitting smoking on that pipe and chuckling to himself, you people lost out. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers, guys.
All right. Bye. There we go. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's every Thursday at this time, and you can download the podcast from any previous week to go and hear what has happened already and what you might need to inform yourself on. There's always something interesting in here. Sometimes some very, very powerful stuff in terms of moving, thoughtful stuff. Sometimes just really, really funny political analysis. You know, with Justice Malala, you don't get second best. CliffCentral.com.